point today. Friends, I want to urge you to get a copy of his hardbound book, From the Hood to the Hill. This will be so encouraging to you. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Get it on our website, saveus.org. And with everyone who gets it, we'll send a transcript of the interview we did with his predecessor, Richard Halvorson, back in 1995. You don't want to miss it. Thanks for joining us here today on Viewpoint. Become a partner with us in your gifts. By faith. To Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. God has a plan for you as well. Let's walk it out.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Grismire. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be those of Leo Zagami, who comes from Europe. He lives in Europe, and of course, he was associated for many years with the upper echelons of Masonry and the Illuminati. And, of course, if you get into the background of Italy, you remember that there was the P2 Lodge, which was a Masonic lodge, which was involved in all sorts of financial shenanigans as far as the Vatican Bank were concerned. And, of course, there were strong overtones of the occult there. But Leo, of course, eventually left this, and he lives. Is it, where do you live in? Is it Norway now? Leo? Leo, are you there?
Yes, just a second. I'm trying to get maybe a headphone in to have more clarity.
All right, fine. You're better off.
You
on a, well, yes, go right ahead. You're better off okay. On a hard line than on a headphone because it doesn't come through so well on the board. Are you on a regular hard line or are you on a headphone?
So, you want me to introduce myself?
Yes, go right ahead.
Well, my experience started in 1993, on the 13th of April 1993, when I joined what can be defined as the Illuminati. That was my first step, the Scottish Rite Supreme Council of Prince Aliato di Montreal in Italy. And after that, I entered a situation in which I was working for them, also at an international level. I went to London. I established contacts with other groups there, and I was initiated later on in the United Genealogy of England also.
Leo, would you mind just getting onto a regular telephone, because we're getting all sorts of static, and it's really not as clear as it should be. Could you get onto a regular telephone?
Yes, I don't know if we have this possibility, though, Dr. Stan.
All right, well, go ahead, but if there's any way you can get onto a regular telephone, it will really be ever so much better.
Yes, unfortunately, for security reasons, I'm in a secure location in which the means of communication sometimes are missing, because we have to change all the time our phone numbers to maintain always a certain amount of security around me. Because of my position at the moment.
Well, now, first, were you a regular Mason? Did you start out and go through the various levels of Masonry to get to be a Scottish Rite Mason?
I was initiated in an unorthodox way, because I was an aristocrat, so I was immediately bestowed the highest degree, so I was initiated into what is the Knight Templar Order immediately, because of my family tradition that goes back hundreds of years to Robert the Bruce, and in Sicily to the Di Gregorio family. So I basically got involved with the Monte Carlo Lodge in 1999.
And this was, in Italy then?
No, I was living in London,
okay.
But I was also going backwards and forwards to Italy. And in Italy, in Florence, I was with certain members of the Illuminati, and they introduced me to the Monte Carlo Lodge. And at that point, I was introduced to this reality and this fraternity that for me became very important. It was only in June 2006 that, because of an internal problem, the problem actually started already in 2003 when I started to distance myself from the American Illuminati and create a faction of the
Hold on, Tom, we'll be right back here. Well, now, Chris, what can you tell us about the American Illuminati?
Well, I'm now in America, and I tell you the reason why is a very serious reason. I mean, they destroyed literally my family in the last 2 years since I left the Monte Carlo Lodge. They made it impossible for me. The American Illuminati were too interested in me. They made the life of my family impossible. At the end, my wife finally decided to leave me because she couldn't cope any longer with what was happening.
And, of course, this was harassment then, because, of course, you'd come out publicly and admitted that you were part of the movement?
Yes, for that reason. First, they tried to get me back in with another meeting just after I opened my first website in December 2006. And later on, they put pressure also, always in December 2006, by sending the police and basically threatening me and my wife that they would take our kids if I didn't close down my website.
Well, what does the Illuminati actually do? I mean, what are their activities, both here and in Europe?
The activities of the Illuminati, you see, the thing is that now, Dr. Stan, after this latest episode in my life that happened just recently with my wife, I had to rejoin the Monte Carlo Lodge. I mean, I can't not get out of there. It's impossible for me. They just made it clear for me that there is no possibility. If I want to stay alive, I have to stay into the game. I will have to retake my position as Grand Master of the European Illuminati in the Monte Carlo Lodge, which is the Ordo Illuminatorum Universalis, and follow my mission. For that reason, they have destroyed my family. I just discovered recently, in the last 48 hours, by finally, after more than 2 months, not being able to achieve any communication about my son that was actually taken from me and kidnapped by this Gulen movement that obviously gave in to the Illuminati and to their request. So My wife was pushed to go to the police by her anger and by the fact that she was manipulated by them, and she made certain accusations against me, and I ended up also in prison at one point, and they confiscated all my computers, all my mobile phones, all my phone agendas, and only now I finally realized the level of manipulation I've been subject to, and it's really terrible for me to know
hold
that...
Hold on for just a moment here. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mr. Zagami, Liu Zagami, has actually his story. He was certainly associated with the Monte Carlo Lodge in Italy, and of course he broke with that. He broke with the Illuminati. He actually went and lived in Paris and in other areas, and now he's in the United States, but apparently he's come under tremendous pressure and harassment, and he says that, of course, his wife had left him because of the harassment, and now, of course, he claims he's living and hiding in the Middle West someplace. Is that correct?
No, oh, my wife?
No, you.
I'm living, at the moment, I'm in Iowa.
Iowa, right. Well, we call that the Middle West. And basically, what sort of things do the Illuminati actually do, though? What is their activity? Certainly, traditionally, the Illuminati was an organization formed in 1776 as a continuation of the ancient mystery religions, and of course out of they had infiltrated the Masonic movement and had a powerful influence in all of Europe, and were instrumental in the French Revolution and many of the revolutions that followed, and of course working always behind the scenes with this whole idea of bringing about a world government. Now, certainly when you were associated with them, was this a movement towards a world government? Was that their goal?
Yes, that's their goal, but this goal is impossible to stop for us, this plan they have. There will be a new world order in any case, Dr. Stan. The plan has already been made a long time ago. The only possibility we have now is an internal struggle. That's why I came here to the United States officially as Grand Master of the European Illuminati to meet with some very important people of the local secret societies, to see who is on my side and who is not, because the skull and bones seems to be the real problem at the moment within the establishment here in the U.S., and not all Freemasons are favorable to the skull and bones. Actually, the majority is not. So there is a lot of misunderstanding of people thinking that Freemasonry is an homogeneous body at times. There is internal struggle, and at the moment there is a very big struggle in Europe, not so much here in America, but the tradition of the Knights Templars is obviously coming from Europe because of the aristocracy. The aristocratic and royal lines are connected to what we define as the Illuminati. That can be not only the ones you define, the Adam Weishaupt Illuminati, but the original Illuminati are the Rosicrucians. And the Rosicrucians exist from a long time before Weishaupt. Weishaupt is a corruption of the Rosicrucian tradition that goes into the realms of black magic, mind control, and manipulation. For that reason, obviously, I and my associates distance themselves from that kind of Illuminism and that kind of Illuminati, because we want to bring forward the tradition that established America, like Benjamin Franklin, who inspired himself on Sir Francis Bacon, the New Atlantis, and the creed really of the Scottish Rite in America, which is based on liberty. We need to defend this liberty. It's about time that this starts to happen. And I'm here in the United States working very much for what's about to happen, because the society is about to fall in a situation of chaos because of the economic really the very bad economic situation we are about to encounter, probably in September already. The Federal Reserve is about to crack. There is really no hope for the economic system as it stands now.
Well, did you Leo, do you believe that the Illuminati played any part in the current financial crisis? And is there a connection between the America's central bank, which of course is the Federal Reserve, and the...
Yes, there is a connection. If you want, I can explain you what's the connection. The connection at the moment is that the Asian Illuminati, the Japanese and the Chinese and... So all these Asian Illuminati are not buying any more the bonds from the U.S. Treasury, and this creates, obviously, a situation of chaos, which is deliberately induced to, at one point, put the current establishment in a state of crisis. Why is that? Because the Asian Illuminati are opposing the Skull and Bones and want the Skull and Bones, their old neocons, out of government before being able to help again the U.S. So if the situation stands as it stands now, we are definitely going towards a crisis because there is too many interests of certain people on coming in once the crisis has unfolded and to reconstruct what is left, because obviously the infrastructures may fall in a state of true chaos. We might see the establishment of the martial law. That's what we want to try to avoid.
Well, of course, is actually the Skull and Bones here in the United States in any way related to the Illuminati?
Skull and Bones is what we can define as the Adam Weishaupt Illuminati per tradition. I mean, and so they are the leading figures of the American Illuminati.
All right,
then you have the Bohemian Grove,
then
you have and other groups.
Leo, let me explain to our listeners out there. The Skull and Bone Society was organized based upon a secret society in Bavaria in Europe, and it was organized back in 1833 at the time when, of course, the Illuminati had a tremendous influence in Europe. And remember, the Illuminati was a modern-day or a quasi-modern-day continuation of the ancient mystery religions. Their objective always has been to bring about a world government and to tap into the supernatural power that's available from the other dimensions. So the Skull and Bone Society then was organized in Yale in 1833. The first class graduated in 1833, and they have been at least part of the major power structure in the United States since that time. It is not simply by coincidence that George Herbert Walker Bush was a member of Skull and Bones, as was his father, as is his son, George W. Bush, and that in 2004 we had a choice between two members of Skull and Bones. One was John Kerry, Senator John Kerry. The other was, of course, George W. Bush. And what are the chances that in a nation of 300 million, we could only find two members of Skull and Bones, a very small society? There's only been 8,000 members since its inception, and probably not more than a couple of thousand living today, and they're the only people we could find to run for president. So basically, they are part of the ruling elite, a very important part. What sort of results have you had contacting Skull and Bones? Are they willing to, of course, communicate with you at all?
At the moment, there is very much interest. They have already established at least a link that I have with the U.S. State Department that will be able to establish a possible dialogue. In the meantime, obviously, we are organizing a resistance to all this because we want to make the people more conscious about the reality of what's going on before it's too late, before they wake up one morning out of this dream with a nightmare that is not going to end anytime soon, because the resources are scarce, and if things start to go the wrong way, we might start having problems of starvation, food shortages, and that is a big problem, because then you have riots in the big cities immediately. You have a very disturbing situation that in front of us at the moment in the U.S. So it's about time that certain people take a responsibility to defend the value of liberty that is at the core of this nation, really, and it's the most important value we can ever bring also abroad. The value of liberty is a fundamental of the American way of life, and at the same time the freedom of fear. But Americans instead have to live in fear. Why? Because of Islamic terrorism that is manipulated by the usual suspects, corrupt Islamic leaders. We need to establish a proper dialogue with these Muslim leaders, and we want that. The European Knights Templars that I represent are here in America to open dialogue with all the people interested. So, and also the people who are not interested, but we are interested in going to visit them, because it's important that they start to understand what's going on, to help out the process for humanity, for a better system altogether. I mean, if the Pentagon was truly working for the betterment of humanity, then the world would be a very different place.
Well, of course, basically,
because of certain people and certain ways of doing things and wanting to prevail over others with their families, that's the thing, the bloodlines. The Illuminati is all based on the bloodlines, including the skull and bones, at least until the 70s, when they started also initiating women and Jews.
And of course, you came from an aristocratic family. Were your relatives, your parents, involved with the Illuminati?
My grandfather was, and my father also. He has been involved, but not in Freemasonry. He never wanted to become a Freemason, while my grandfather instead was a senator and also a Freemason in Italy.
All right, fine. Of course, now, basically, do the people within this organization have an influence on the royalty of Europe? What's the tie-in to the royalty of Europe and this movement towards the world government?
I can't hear you, sorry.
Basically, what is the tie-in to the royalty of Europe, the royal families of Europe? The Queen of the Netherlands, the King of Spain, the British royal family.
They are all connected with the Knights of Malta or the Knights of St. John. There is a network of knighthoods that connects all the aristocracy and the royalty. And this network of knighthoods then meets in Masonic lodges, very exclusive ones like the one in Monte Carlo, and there we sort out business at very high level. Now there is an internal problem. We have to clear the pyramid out of those people who practice Satanism, the people who are manipulating the system, but now there is not much time. We have to change things from within.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Leo Zagami, who has recently come to the United States. Well, Leo is talking to us certainly about coming to the United States, and you foresee that maybe by September of this year that there could be a good deal of instability. We, of course, hear that about a secret session held back in Washington, D.C. for the congressmen. It's only about the sixth time in the history of our nation when a secret session of Congress was held, and everybody there was sworn to secrecy, and they were talking about the possibility of some very real problems of unrest in the United States by September. Is this really what you're referring to?
Yes, yes. And that's why I'm actually active in starting a network process between the security contractors. I also established my own security company, which is Green Lion Security, which takes care of my security here in the United States and abroad. And basically also a link with the militias that, as you know, have been involved in defending the value of liberty for many years here in the United States. This is a phenomenon that's typical of the United States because of the Second Amendment. But it's important that these militias actually stand for something real, and that this time they finally put themselves to the service of the people when the people will need them. Because when you start having riots, you start having situations of unrest, a civil war, if you don't have the help of organized groups of military that can actively help the population that would be involved in one way or another in this dramatic scenario, we try to see if it's possible to avoid the involvement of the civilian population in any real troubles. But it's very difficult, Dr. Stern. I mean, we are here in some situation of emergency whereby a lot of CIA agents are escaping and going down to South America. We are actually leaving the country at the moment.
You're actually suggesting that the CIA agents know what's going to be happening and they're trying to leave the country?
Some of them do, yes. Some of them have done that.
Well, is there any relationship between the Illuminati and the Central Intelligence Agency or the intelligence agencies in Europe, the various countries?
Absolutely. The Illuminati run the intelligence agencies.
The Illuminati runs the intelligence agencies. Well, of course, this was originally funded, or actually started by Alan Dulles here in the United States, the Central Intelligence Agency, I think 1947, 1948. Was Dulles indeed part of this whole Illuminati movement?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you can't be part of what we call the gaze if you are not a player. To be a player, you have to be initiated at the highest level and understand the real game is the Illuminati game, the ultra secret, the real ultra secret of the CIA. I mean, nowadays we can start to give you this kind of information because the situation is so dramatic that we have to prepare a disclosure project in the next 4 years, so to prepare people to a totally different reality of things to come in the near future, which are going to be quite dramatic for them to understand at first. This is a tradition that spans thousands of years. It's not born in 1776. America is the modern fruit of ancient tradition, and it's been a
fruit for a purpose. Hold that thought.
American
hold that thought. Just a moment. This is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Leo Zagami, that he was just saying that most people do not understand that the United States is the modern-day manifestation of the ancient traditions, these ancient traditions of the secret societies. Would that be a fair statement, Leo?
Absolutely. I agree.
And of course, that these influences are here. And they date back to the ancient mystery religions, to these this ancient dream, this ancient plan that the seers of past millennium to bring about a world government. And of course, this was brought about by chaos. But of course, it is Leo's contention that the Central Intelligence Agency, at least many people within the Central Intelligence Agency, are well aware of what this is really all about. And some of those, of course, who see no future for America are beginning to leave the country and go to South America. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, correct.
Oh, and of course, we find, of course, George Herbert Walker Bush, a member of the Skull and Bones, actually director of the Central Intelligence Agency, and today, President George Herbert Walker Bush, ex-President George Herbert Walker Bush's son, is the President of the United States, and he's, of course, taking us into these no-win wars in Europe and Iraq and Afghanistan, and then, of course, many people are concerned he's going to actually take us into a war with both Iran and Syria. Do you know anything at all about that? Is it possible that this is really their plan, is to involve us with a war with the Muslim world?
Sorry, I didn't hear your last question.
Is there a possibility that we're going to go to war with Iran and Syria?
No, forget it. That's just a show. That's rubbish. You know, whatever goes on in the Middle East is a foreign intelligence show. The Illuminati have the factions within is the Vatican and the Zionists. These two factions are the leading, really, factions of the Illuminati. The Vatican has a central role in what are the real Illuminati that are at work here, the ones that have been created by the Jesuits, and the Jesuits themselves manipulate the high degrees of Scottish Rite Freemasonry at times for their own interest. This is something that has to end. We have to bring clarity. We have to bring the possibility that Freemasonry is again a clean and honest institution that serves the purpose which it has been created for. And also, we remember that America is a nation that's been founded by Masonic values, ideas, and principles, and by Masonic revolutionaries. And for that reason, we want to follow their tradition in this new revolution of truth, and hopefully we will be able to avoid civil war.
Well, you're saying, of course, that America was founded on Masonic traditions, and you want to get back to those traditions here? Is that basically what you're saying?
I want to get those traditions finally clear in front of the public, and want to get rid of the satanic elements present in some secret societies that are co-Masonic or connected to Freemason in any way, like, for example, the Bohemian Grove, and other people have practiced things that are obviously satanic.
All right, fine.
Skull and Bones is satanic. I mean, what they practice down there is satanic.
And, of course, you feel that the Bohemian Grove, then, fits into that same category, and are there elements, then, within the Rosicrucians and the Theosophists that fit into that category?
The Theosophists, but not the Rosicrucians. You shouldn't mix the Theosophists with the Rosicrucians. The Theosophists is a later creation of the Rosicrucians, and basically we have also a series of secret societies like the Martinists, you have the Società Rosicruciana in Anglia, you have the Priory of Zion, which is very important in Europe, in the Knights Templars. You can only be and accede to the Priory of Zion if you are a 33 degree Scottish Rite Mason, and you have a very complicated network of secret societies that we can't really they are all part of the same Illuminati establishment. And at the same time, we have the Muslim Illuminati, we have also the Rabbinical Council with their own Illuminati. So there is the Christian tradition, the Muslim tradition, and the Jewish tradition at work at the highest level, because the pyramid is made in a way that at the highest level people should be doing business regardless of their religion, of their race, of their color. And actually we agree with that, fundamentally the principle is not wrong. I mean, if we can put aside really the religious fundamentalism, we have already a very important starting step, but we have to also respect God, we have to respect the great architect of the universe, as I'm one of those Masons who believes in God and thinks that he's an essential part of my Freemasonry.
All right, hold on, of course, this is all, of course, Leo believes, of course, in the great architect of the universe, the universal God. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, the Masonic belief is in the God, their God is the great architect of the universe. Would that be a fair statement that Masons believe in this great architect of the universe, which is different than the God of the Bible?
No, it's the same as the God in the Bible, absolutely the same. We shouldn't make any confusions. We can call him in many ways, but God is only one. We start, dividing ourselves and who has the better God on the two sides of the river, we're never going to get anywhere.
Right.
We are really in a moment in which we have to use the right things within the Masonic establishment for our benefit. Those negative things we have to put on the side. But there is a very important tradition there which is completely linked with the American way of life and who we are. We just have to watch around, and there is many temples and lodges of Freemasonry all over the place, and you can't think that these people are all criminal. These are people that have helped the United States be what it is nowadays. So they should have the respect they deserve. Freemasonry should be, again, a clear and clean institution, but obviously they have to have a different way of proposing themselves to the people, and for that reason, I'm doing this job now. I'm, empowering myself with this job which is necessary at this moment. It's absolutely necessary. So people can finally have some clarity in the picture and understand who the evildoers are, so we can specifically target them and not others. There is people that use black magic, there is the Beisha of the Illuminati in league with the Jesuits, in league with the Zionists, they manipulate also the Muslims. We have to find a way to make people realize that they can't go on like this, because there is about to happen an impelling crisis, but in the year 2012, there is also a big event that is going to happen on the 21st of December 2012, and that event is going to happen in the south of France, and it's a very, very important event, because after that event, we're going to hear of wars and rumors of wars. For 7 years of tribulation, mankind will be in a situation never, never heard before, because we are reaching in 2012 a key moment for humanity, of 25,920 years, after 2,160 years, the minor cycle. This is an incredible moment for us to be here, to witness this. We have to become aware of what is happening around us, and we have to also leave the conspiracy theories aside.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Leo Zugami. And, of course, if you'd like to know a little bit more about him, if you have access to a computer, I suggest you go to your computer and Google in Leo, L-E-O, Zugami, Z-A-G-A-M-I, and you'll find a number of articles there and even some videos there of Leo. And, of course, going into the background of his position in Europe. And now he's in the United States. Now, are you trying to contact the Masonic lodges over here, or what?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I have already established contact with the local Masonic temples and Scottish Rite Consistory, and I have already been speaking with very high-level Masons about what my intentions are, giving a bit of clarity in all these matters for the people out there, so we don't have any more Dan Brown version of the conspiracy, which is not the correct one. It's the manipulated version that the Vatican and the corrupt side of the CIA that are working with the enemy are using against us, because not all people in the CIA or not all people in the FBI or in the police are corrupt. There is many, many good people, and these people are starting to wake up, and there is a very, very big revolution going on within the intelligence community at the moment, which is quite incredible. The military intelligence community is really having some big things happening at the moment here in the United States.
Well, Chris, certainly you're talking about by September, you're expecting civil unrest in the United States. Now, will this be related to the financial situation, people losing their homes? Will this be related to the food shortages? Will this be related, of course, to what's happening internationally and as far as the war in the Middle East? I mean, as you pointed out, the war in the Middle East is simply a scam war in many respects. An awful lot of Americans are losing their lives, but certainly nowhere near as many over in Vietnam. But it is a great distraction to keep us from seeing what's going on here at home. Step by step, we are losing our freedom. Now, is the same thing happening in Europe? Are the people in Europe increasingly come under control? And what is the relationship between the European Union and this effort to establish a worldwide dictatorship?
But this is a worldwide effort by all the intelligence agencies and military operators and whatever that are trying to establish this police state everywhere. I mean, we are in the hands of the police state in Europe, in America, in China, everywhere. It's a police state. Obviously, in China, that is really the way the Illuminati will love to have it, you know, because the Illuminati helped also establish communism, also with the Spartacus organization in Germany, which was based on the name of Adam Weishaupt. So communism is a creation of the evil side of the Illuminati, the Adam Weishaupt Illuminati. I come here representing the European Rosicrucian tradition, the Ordo Illuminatorum Universali, a very rich tradition. I hope that we can start a dialogue and the possibility for us in Europe, South America, this difficult time, so we can exchange the favor that America has done to us by freeing us of the Nazis a long time ago.
All right, fine. Certainly, I think it's important that we look into the traditions that really, of course, created America. Most people are not really aware of the Masonic influence here when America was founded. Christians are told that, of course, this was founded as a Christian nation. of Masons are told it was formed as a Masonic nation. The truth of the matter is, it was predominantly a Christian nation, but there was a powerful Masonic and occult influence here when America was founded as a nation, and of course the Christian influence was predominant for many years. Unfortunately today, the occult influence is the major driving force behind what's going on, and most people have no idea what it's all about. Now, is there a very active Rosicrucian movement in the United States today?
Yes, but not many ones are really linked with the true, genuine tradition in Europe. Some of them are, and they claim their relations with Europe to be very good, but there is not really a very good link with the European Rosicrucian establishment at the highest level. If not, obviously, with the SRIA, which works actively with America at times, there has been always exchanges with the Società Rosicruciana in America and the one in Anglia, which are, but even if they don't, they are not linked together, they have still people at the highest level that work in communication with one another. Also, we have very many Rosicrucian movements that also are addressed to the masses. They kind of manipulate the masses into thinking they can achieve some kind of initiation by a correspondence course, like Amok does. But that is just a way of manipulating the masses of sheep out there. That's not really the real Rosicrucians, because the real Rosicrucians are only members of the aristocracy at the highest level and initiated in certain families to this mystery.
No, of course, would you mind repeating that, actually, to indoctrinate certain families in the mysteries? Is that what you were saying?
Absolutely, and those mysteries are mysteries also regarding sexual magic at a very high level, and the use of sexual magic and the products of sexual magic. So there is very much a lot of ignorance out there on what the Illuminati are and what kind of weaponry they use, because they use psychological warfare and black magic. They are basically psyops. They work within the range of psychological warfare, because they work with propaganda to influence what we think, and that happens to all the media, and that are all manipulated by one Freemason or another Illuminati or whatever there. But there is also a genuine core of people who are just initiates and want to embrace, for example, the esoteric part of the Rosicrucian tradition. Those people are people of same principles, really. So there is also some very honest people out there that don't want to have anything to do with the New World Order concept that is brought forward at the moment by certain people. We would like New World Order to be not so Orwellian and really disturbing the way that the Big Brother works against you and is able to track you down and to manipulate your life. As I said, I had left the Illuminati 2 years ago, but after 2 years, they got me back in, because I cannot stop working for them, because it's impossible to stop working for the Illuminati. That will mean for me either get killed or lose the possibility of ever seeing my child again, or things of this way. So, for example, the fact that even my wife, who loved me so much, Fatma Suslu, left me because of my involvement with these people, because they were truly not giving up on the fact that I had left them. They wanted me back in, and I tell you, Stan, they were very convincing. They were very convincing.
Well, of course, but to these people that you're working with, that you have worked with in the past, and you're working with at the present time, are they dedicated to the formation of this world government, or are they opposing the movement?
There is different factions within the secret societies and the Illuminati. I have been involved with them for a long time, so my involvement is a very specific one, and they couldn't and didn't want to get in any way rid of my project, because it was a very important part of their work. So the Illuminati work for a new world order. That is a structure that is going to come on this planet in any case, because it's not the decision of man. It's the decision of God. It's the kingdom of God, the new world order that is envisioned by the prophecies. The kingdom of God will be only in the hands of a genuine Messiah. It would not be possible to fall in the hands of somebody that will be an Antichrist.
All
right. For that reason, we have to oppose anybody that comes forward as an Antichrist in the next few years, because there will be definitely a very big Antichrist figure that will come forward.
Well, now, because people talk about the Council of 13. The Council of 13, is this part of the Illuminati, or is this simply an old wives' tale?
No, no, it exists, and it's the Council of 12 plus the 13th member becomes the Council of 13, but the 13th member ideally is Jesus when he comes back in the end of time, or somebody that is purified in that tradition and has a pure contact with the Holy Ghost, with what is defined as the Holy Spirit. What we're going to see in the next few years is the big struggle of the Second Coming. We are really living the prophecies, Dr. Stan. This is not a lie. We are living the prophecies.
Well, I certainly believe we're living in prophetic times and that these prophecies are coming to fulfillment. But do the members of the Illuminati believe in the prophecies of the Holy Scriptures?
You don't understand. The members of the Illuminati are part of the prophecies and the Holy Spirit.
The members of the Illuminati are part of the prophecies and the Holy Spirit. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. And so you actually have gone returned back to working for them at the present time then?
That is my mission, which has been given to me, and I now obviously realize after 2 or 3 months from when this originally started on the 23rd of February, when my wife suddenly disappeared and left me, but then I got arrested, and then I suddenly found myself in one of the situations in my life in which I lost everything and was taken everything from me, but I now realize that it wasn't the fault of my wife in any case. Fatma Susu is innocent. It was the Illuminati, and she now has admitted that, and I think in the future she will probably even say that officially. She has left me because of my work in the Illuminati, because of my involvement with the Illuminati. I met my wife when I was still with the Illuminati, but I tried to leave them from June 2006, but unfortunately there is no way I can leave them, because the only way I can leave them is in a coffin.
And so basically then, are you really working for them at the present time as you're over here in the United States beginning to contact the various...
I represent myself, the Grand Master of the Ordo Illuminatorum Universalis in Monte Carlo. I am a member of the Masonic Executive Committee, one of the leaders of the Masonic Executive Committee, and so I work for an act, something very active, something really real, which is to...
I know, of course, are the people in Europe concerned about the United States and the fact that we could be getting into some very, very real problems? You mentioned that the Asians are no longer going to be buying our bonds, and of course we're dependent upon other countries to finance the massive deficit. We're running a deficit here of about $2.5 billion a day. If the other countries do not certainly buy our bonds, why, America would very, very soon either go bankrupt or have to simply destroy the value of the American dollar. And is there a close tie-in between the Illuminati and the secret societies and the banking system here in the United States and the banking system in Europe?
Absolutely. They control the Federal Reserve, and they control also the basically the European Central Bank. But you see, in the Illuminati at the moment, there is a big clash within the Illuminati, because the Vatican has always tried to manipulate the Illuminati and control them. Now there is a rebellion going on, and this rebellion is in the name of the Knights Templar Order, And it's a serious rebellion. It's going to bring some real big events happening soon. Because, the manipulation that the Vatican and the Zionists have established on worldwide politics is as such unbearable. They have to be limited. The Vatican in the U.S. has to be limited. And thank God now the Catholic Church in America is going to distance themselves from the pedophilia kingdom of the Vatican. So I hope that finally America starts distancing themselves from the Vatican, because we're going to witness soon, in the next 2 years, the fall of Rome. I tell you, that's not going to be a nice picture.
Ma'am, would you mind repeating that? No, what's going to happen as far as the Vatican is concerned?
You see, the Vatican is about to have the last pope, which is going to be a black pope. It's called Francis Arinze, which is the cardinal of Belletri Segni, and basically he's going to be the next pope, and after that, that's the last one. It's the black pope, the last pope.
And now, because you're thinking then that Pope Benedict is going to pass away here before long? The current pope?
I don't know when he's going to pass away. Definitely he's under a lot of pressure, because he's gay. His love affair is creating a lot of problems. His past also in Germany should be investigated more deeply, because apparently there is also involvement in pedophilia. I mean, Ratzinger is gay. They had kicked out of the Vatican last month his lover. So we have really the Antichrist sitting in the chair of St. Peter. This is the end of times, my friend. When you have a gay pope, that is the end of time.
Well, that is really quite a statement to make. Is there any documentation of the fact that of that?
I have two important people. One person is ex-Giuntiglia, ex-treasurer of the, well, treasurer of the people, but also secretary of the Monte Carlo Lodge, who is obviously a very important member, a Vatican insider, because the P2 has worked for many years with the Vatican. Now the P2, in this situation, is starting to distance themselves from the Vatican. And the Monte Carlo Lodge definitely is playing a very important role in this new situation, in which finally we are starting to distance Freemasonry from the Church, for the benefit really of mankind, because we really want to be free of this oppression, and also finally reveal to the people of the world the science of God after 2012, this science that will free mankind from all superstition and will finally bring you to the next level of evolution.
All right, fine. Do you have any website of your own you'd like to put out at the present time?
Well, I would also like to publicize the fact that they are selling a dinner on eBay with Grandmaster Leo Lion Zagami. You can go and check that on eBay, Grandmaster Leo Lion Zagami. And you can start the bid at $3,000. You can buy it for $25,000. It's a possibility. One-in-a-lifetime possibility is an experiment we are doing so that people can meet the Grandmaster of the Illuminati, European Illuminati, which is myself, but during my mission here in the United States.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, Leo, do you go ahead and finish up. You were just saying that people could look on eBay, and what will they find on eBay?
They will find the possibility to actually go to dinner with Leo Zagami and participate also to this money that I will get will also go to Christian charities. Part of it also will be used for my security, because to organize such a dinner also we have some very big security arrangements in place that need to be paid. For that reason, the price obviously that needs to be paid is not so high, but obviously it's not cheap.
I see. And Georgia then is your, what is it, like a bodyguard who's looking after your security?
No, I have a security team of at least 6 bodyguards with me at all times. My chief of security is called Clinton Torres, and unfortunately I have to report that 2 days ago we have been assaulted out of a club. First my chief of security was pushed on the side and he broke his ankle. Then we sent one of the bodyguards to pick up one of the two cars, and because we broke the security procedure, sending him on his own, he fell in a trap and they stabbed him in the hand. So basically I have two of my security that are down and are seriously injured.
Well, of course, this was, these were simply accidents, weren't they?
Well, it wasn't really an accident. Somebody that follows you from behind and stabs you while you're going picking up a car, knowing very well that that was one of the two bodyguards that was not wearing weapons. I have two bodyguards that wear weapons, two bodyguards that usually don't wear weapons. So, I mean, the one that went to the car didn't have any weapons. That was the only reason why they got away with it. But and it was the work of a professional. He knocked him unconscious, and it was only an hour later when I sent another bodyguard to check what was happening that he found him conscious. So, I mean, the situation definitely is very unclear here. The enemy is the Skull and Bones, and he's a very big enemy, Dr. Stan. I mean, I'm not fronting a small enemy here, and I'm in the U.S. So you can imagine what kind of security operation I have in place to protect myself.
Well, I'm glad that you are being protected. Anyway, our guest this evening has been Leo Gazzami, and we're out of time. But I want to thank you so very much for being with us, and I hope you'll keep in touch with us and keep us appraised, of course, as you see this unfolding saga here in the United States. Thank you very much for everything you're doing and for being with us for this hour.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
God bless America.
Okay, bye-bye, and we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Leo Gazzami claims that he was, of course, one of the leaders of the Illuminati in Europe and is here in the United States at the present time. You can go up on the Internet, look up the various articles there on him, and you're going to have to, in your own mind, determine, the authenticity of what you've heard. But he talks about, of course, the fact that what's going on today is a continuation of the mysteries. And that is absolutely right. Most people don't even know what the mysteries are, but this was the secret knowledge that's been passed down for thousands of years. And, of course, we have a talk. It's called the secret knowledge, and it comes with a syllabus, and we recommend it for you. We actually have a couple of very professionally done DVDs. One is called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and the other is the Riddles in Stone. The secret history of, the secret mystery of the architecture of our nation's capital. I recommend both of these DVDs to you. They are excellent. They're very, very professionally done, very well done. And you will begin to understand these spiritual forces that have been at work since America was created as a nation. And what Leo says is absolutely true, that America is the dominant force in the world today. And, of course, he's talks about the fact that there is going to be very, very soon tremendous unrest in our society. And I believe that is probably true. But I believe that behind all of this, of course, is this the spiritual battle that began at the Garden of Eden and is being played out in our day. Leo says that these are the end of times, and I rather tend to believe him. How long are we talking about? No one knows. Whether I'll be here when this all comes to fulfillment, I can't tell you. He talks about the Antichrist coming, and of course to beware of him, and I believe that is absolutely true. I read the Luciferian publications. They tell us that the Antichrist is about to be openly declared. Now, of course, he will be declared not in the time of the Luciferians, but in God's time. Because I believe that God is the ruler of the heavens and the earth, and that there is a play that's unfolding before our very eyes. There are secret societies, Skull and Bones. Our president belongs to Skull and Bones, as did Senator John Kerry, who ran against him for the presidency in 2004. And when Tim Russert asked both of them about the secret society they belong to, both men who supposedly were going to be loyal to America said, oh, we can't talk about that. Why, that's just too secret to talk about. And, of course, people are not going to tell you about the secret societies. The Rosicrucians really are here in the United States. The Knights Templar tradition is contained within the various degrees of Freemasonry, and the Knights Templar were an occult organization formed in 1118. And, of course, they were supposedly formed to guard people, pilgrims going to the Holy Land during the Crusades, but they were actually there in search of the mystery religions, the mystery of the mystery religions, and they actually found they were able to tap into these dark spiritual forces. They came back, and by the 1200s, they were the major financial force in Great Britain, pardon me, I should say in Europe, and they were the first central bankers, the first international bankers, and then in 1307, Friday the 13th, 1307. Why is Friday the 13th an unlucky day? Because that was the day that Jacques de Molay, the leader of the Knights Templars, was arrested because, of course, their organization had tapped into the dark side, and they were Luciferians. They worshipped Lucifer. And, of course, if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, we verify from the writings of the Masonry's greatest philosopher, Manly P. Hall, who actually tells you the reason that they had to do away with the Templars at that time was because they had tapped into this dark source. And get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. I've recommended it to you. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Now, I cannot vouch for anything you've heard this evening, although there certainly seems to be a great deal of truth to the things that have been said, and certainly I do believe that there are going to be some very real problems in America, perhaps within this year, perhaps by September. Maybe this is all to get us scared to death so we can't be effective. We'll find out with the passage of time. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we need to be minds of the views that are expressed here and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be those of Dr. Fred Bowman, and we're going to be talking about Prozac. Now, of course, it's amazing how many people are on Prozac today, and certainly it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and yet if you look at the original double-blind studies on Prozac, why, unless you were terribly, terribly depressed, it really probably didn't do much of any good. And yet today they're trying to pass legislation in Washington, D.C., something called the Mothers Act, which has already passed the House of Representatives and is now, of course, in hearings of the Senate, that will require healthcare personnel to recommend to pregnant women that they actually take Prozac to keep from getting a postpartum depression. The only trouble is it results in abortion. It can have serious effect on the mind of their child, because, of course, what these drugs do is I'm going to let Dr. Bowman tell you, of course, the story. He knows this far better than I do. Dr. Bowman, thank you very much for being with us.
Dr. Meyer. Monteith. Good to be with you again.
Why don't you go ahead and give us the background of what's going on as far as Prozac is concerned and these other SSRIs that they're prescribing like candy and they want to give to every pregnant woman. What sort of madness is this?
Well, it truly is madness, but it's done, enabled largely by Congress, the Senate, our government, which is doing the bidding of the pharmaceutical industry at every turn. I was thinking today of the thalidomide mishap back in about 1960. That incident, thalidomide was being suggested as a marketplace drug here in the United States, but an examiner at the Food and Drug Administration, Francis Kelsey, who was indeed looking out for the welfare of the public, saw disturbing things about thalidomide in the literature. And so thalidomide was kept off of the market in the United States while it caused over 10,000 cases of congenital limb amputations or focomelia throughout the rest of the developed countries of the world, mainly Western Europe, England, and Germany. But today, the government has been behind psychiatry and the pharmaceutical industry as they have sought to put in place screening, mental health screening, in all of the schools, all of the high schools of the country, calling this teen screen. This is just it's a brazen attempt to push drugs on the population. There were trials of teen screen done in Tennessee, and as it turned out, 60 to 70% of the children who took the teen screen instrument, answering questions about their mood, turned out to have a on the teen screen instrument a serious mental illness. And they were referred often without their parents' knowledge for mental health counseling, which meant for a drug prescription.
Now hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. Fred Baumann. He's a psychiatrist and talking about, of course, this mental health screening to get our children onto drugs. All right, you go right ahead with the story. Now, of course, did these children actually get put on Ritalin, or did they get put on Prozac?
Many of them got put on, got sent to a mental health counselor and got put on drugs, even without their family's awareness and without anything resembling informed consent. There have been lawsuits pertaining to those intrusions into the lives of young children. Children as young as 13 and 14 years of age were told to their face by these for-profit hired mental health counselors that they had a brain disorder or a chemical imbalance of the brain, that they were mentally ill and that they needed to be on these drugs. By the way, Dr. Monteith, I'd like to clarify for you and your audience that I'm not a psychiatrist.
Oh, you're not.
I am a neurologist.
Okay, fine. Well, that's
so I have in my career, throughout my career, had to determine whether real disease, real brain disease was present or not. Things like strokes, brain tumors, multiple sclerosis, and so on. And so the way I got, I became involved in these issues is, I began to have more and more children sent to me by schools and by their primary physicians, told often by school teachers and school diagnostic teams that they had ADHD or conduct disorder or oppositional defiant disorder and that they needed to be on Ritalin or Adderall or one psychiatric drug or the other. And Dr. Monteith, I could find nothing wrong with these children. They were normal, and I began to dig in my heels and talk back firmly to schools and tell them that they had no business of practicing medicine without a license. And thus my involvement in trying to speak back to psychiatry, who has allowed itself to be bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical industry and wholly controlled by them. Getting back to Teen Screen, this by the way was being done often by school districts on their own. There have been some states where I believe Teen Screen has become law.
Hold that thought, will you please? Just for a moment as we bring other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Dr. Fred Bowman is with us. Dr. Bowman is a neurologist, not a psychiatrist. But he has, of course, been very outspoken in his criticism of the fact that certainly many of our school children all across America are being put into these various teen screen programs where they actually take mental health screening, and a significant percentage of them are told then that they are ill, that they have a problem with their brains, chemical imbalance of their brain. About what percentage of the children ordinarily are given that diagnosis after taking the teen screen test?
In the one trial area of which I'm aware, I think it was somewhere in Tennessee, I believe Knoxville, well over half of all of the children who took the teen screen survey, it's just a behavioral questionnaire, over half were found by the questionnaire to have a mental illness and were referred for mental health treatment, which invariably meant a prescription for a drug such as an antidepressant or a stimulant, and now increasingly the vicious poisons that are antipsychotic drugs are being given increasingly to the youth of our country, regardless of the fact that they are incredibly dangerous and are virtually unfit for human consumption.
Well, now, why are they dangerous, after all? These are serum serotonin reabsorption inhibitors. They simply are getting the level of the serotonin back to normal. What's dangerous about that?
Well, what's dangerous about it is that there is no test that can be done beforehand that proves or indicates that there's anything abnormal about the brain or anything abnormal about any chemical in the brain. That's a supposition by psychiatry that has become the linchpin of its marketing campaign. If they can say there is a chemical imbalance of the brain, of the serotonin, let's say, then they say that they have a scientific rationale to give an SSRI, a specific serotonin reuptake inhibitor, to balance the serotonin, but there's no proof in the first place that there is any imbalance of the brain, and the drugs are foreign substances to the body, that is, they're exogenous chemicals, and all chemicals introduced into the body by ingestion or injection, not made by the body's own organs for the body, are in fact poisons, and all drugs have to have their risks and benefits carefully weighed when they are used as medications in the treatment of actual diseases, things such as diabetes, where we know insulin is deficient, and so there is a rationale for giving insulin. And in epilepsy. We give anticonvulsants or anti-epileptic drugs to control epilepsy. Those are real diseases. In the instance of the genetic disease phenylketonuria, where phenylalanine cannot be metabolized and levels rise to very high levels in the newborn period, that will damage the brain. If the diagnosis is made early, as is mandated by state law in most states, the child is then put on a specific formula, Lofenilac, which has little or no phenylalanine, and the child's brain is spared. But psychiatry, in speaking of chemical imbalances of the brain, referring to bipolar disorder, conduct disorder, ADHD, and so on, there's absolutely no proof that any psychiatric diagnosis is an actual brain abnormality or brain disease or chemical imbalance. That is the fundamental fraud throughout psychiatry.
Now, my understanding is that Prozac, at least in certain instances, actually leads to suicidal and homicidal tendencies. And most, of course, of our major shootings on campuses are related either to Prozac or Ritalin or drugs that are related to those. It's certainly almost all of the young people who are involved in killing their fellow students or former students suddenly seem to be related to these. Why isn't anybody concerned about the fact that there's no question at all that, at least in certain people, things like Prozac do lead to homicidal and suicidal tendencies?
There is no doubt about that. The British appear to be more concerned about that established fact than our Food and Drug Administration. Fully 2 to 3 years ago, they, having reviewed all of the published literature and much of the unpublished literature, much of which had been hidden from public view by the drug companies themselves, the British regulatory agency came to the conclusion that these drugs of the Prozac type, the SSRI antidepressants, were indeed causing more suicidal ideation and suicidal attempts than they were preventing. And they took all of the SSRIs off of the market for children with the sole exception of Prozac itself. Here in the United States, though, the FDA has stiffened the wording of the black box warnings that are on the drug inserts for all of the SSRIs, Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, and so on. But our FDA largely funded in its drug approval processes by the industry itself, seems to have no taste for truly regulating and controlling excesses of the pharmaceutical industry.
And I think it's really so important, the point that you make, that the FDA, the U.S. Federal Drug Administration, is largely funded by the drug industry. You would think it was going to represent us and be funded by the government, but no, of course, they say, well, you know, of course, the drug industry is making so much money and they're so generous and they just love to give money away. They're giving away large sums of money to the Federal Drug Administration, which, of course, then is monitoring their analysis of the drugs.
Exactly.
Well, of course, the old idea that he who pays the piper calls the tune. And when the drug companies are funding the Federal Drug Administration and paying the salaries on these people, who do you think they're going to be looking after? The American public or, of course, the drug companies that are funding their salaries? But the average American doesn't even understand that. And then, you know, the thing that really bothers me, Dr. Bowman, is I don't think the average doctor ever looks at a package insert. I know when I was practicing medicine, I never looked at them. You know, I got all the information from that very attractive, detailed woman who came, the salesperson who came from the drug company, or that very nice, nicely dressed young man with a good sense of humor who worked for the drug companies, and they gave us all the information. They gave us all the information the drug companies wanted us to know. And very, very few physicians really have ever read the drug inserts. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I think I got through my career without ever accepting information or seeking information from a drug company representative. I think what was different about the practice of medicine 15, 20, 30 years ago was that physicians were not under economic pressure to diagnose excessively or to drug or to prescribe excessively to generate income. So I think we all used a relatively small number of drugs, and we became experienced with them. We became more knowledgeable of those drugs, using them day in and day out, and we didn't need input from drug company representatives. And I think you will recall and perhaps agree with me that new drugs that were truly revolutionary come along only a few times in a lifetime. And here I think of L-DOPA for Parkinson's disease. We've had some Tegretol for epilepsy, but that wasn't truly revolutionary. It wasn't that much better than Dilantin. But you simply cannot know the upside and the downside of new drugs until you've had experience, until those drugs have stood the test of time, regardless of what the literature says, regardless of what the drug company is saying.
Well, I think the interesting thing about Prozac is that they actually suppressed the original double-blind studies.
Yes.
When you look at the original double-blind studies, they showed that the placebo did a great job, the sugar pill.
Sure.
It did almost as good a job as the Prozac. I mean, we're talking maybe a 1% difference. On a billion-dollar industry, you're going to take the average person off the street, it has a little nervousness or depression, and you're going to put them on this drug when there's no scientific evidence it hurt, it can help. And, of course, tremendous evidence it can do harm.
Well, I think all of the reviews of the literature now have it that the SSRIs are, in fact, no better than placebo.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a minute. Dr. Bowman, you go right ahead. Bowman, go right ahead with you. Because I think this is so vitally important that people understand that here's the drug, works just about as well as a sugar pill, and so why are we putting so many people on it? Because there are potential complications from the use of Prozac, and certainly we know, of course, the suicidal and homicidal tendencies that this produces, because you're actually elevating the level of serotonin in the human brain. And what effect does that have on people as you do begin to raise the level of serotonin?
Well, the speaking of suppression of the bad news about the drugs, about Prozac in particular, from the early studies, one of the authors of the earliest studies was Jonathan Cole, C-O-L-E, and he was the head of a research division at the NIMH and later went to Harvard, the McLean Hospital, and he states about his early experiences with Prozac that they began getting calls from patients they had on Prozac who reported that they had odd, strange, and disturbing feelings unlike any they'd ever come in with initially. unlike the initial depressive symptoms that brought them in. And there were actually increased numbers of reports of suicidal ideation, of thoughts of doing harm to themselves and others. And Dr. Coles was, as an ethical scientific investigator, was extremely angry at Eli Lilly for suppressing the early adverse literature, which was generated back in the back around 1990-1991. Dr. Monteith, this kind of brings us, we've discussed the teen screen and how the pharmaceutical industry with the psychiatric profession that they have commandeered, they've bought and paid for them. But this takes us to a consideration of the Mothers Act, which now is a targeting by psychiatry and the pharmaceutical industry of women who are pregnant or women who are postpartum who have delivered, wanting to make it law that such free citizens must submit to a government-sanctioned teen screen, a psychiatric screening device to determine if they are becoming depressed, developing such things as bipolar disorder or postpartum depression. And there is already a very considerable, though anecdotal, largely anecdotal, literature out there on the dangers of Prozac and the SSRIs when used in pregnant women or in the postpartum period or in women who are nursing their babies.
All right, well, I want you to hold that topic as we can bring our stations back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Dr. Bowman was just pointing out that that actually many people on Prozac will get all sorts of unusual feelings and strange impulses, things that they never had before, because, of course, the serotonin level is artificially increased in their brain, and, of course, the efforts to actually actually destroy serotonin, which is, normal in the body. Now they get very high levels of serotonin, got all sorts of strange ideologies and sensations, and all of this information was suppressed by the manufacturers intentionally and purposely. And then Dr. Bowman began to talk about the problem we have as far as this Mothers Act, which, of course, most Americans have never heard of because you're not supposed to, because there's been a conscious effort to conceal the fact this has already passed the House of Representatives. It is in the Senate hearings at the present time, and it will mandate by law the fact that women are going to have to be given these federal law. I mean, if you violate this federal law, you could lose your medical license, you could lose everything you have. Women are going to be given these tests with the idea that if it's found that there's something in these questions that makes the practitioner feel that they might, go into a postpartum depression or have some problem, that they would then be recommended to be put on these medications. And yet, of course, Dr. Bowman is talking about the fact that there is a great deal of anecdotal evidence that the Prozac and these pills are harmful to pregnant women, both pregnant women and women in the postpartum period. And, of course, if they're postpartum and they're nursing their child, then the child is going to get these SSRI inhibitors. And what effect is that going to have on the brain? Well, what, Dr. Bowman, what have people been talking about? My understanding is there actually are some scientific studies that suggest disastrous effects when these are given to animals, and certainly if they're harmful to animals, why wouldn't we think they'd be harmful to human beings?
Well, they are indeed causing all kinds of problems in the unborn child where the mother has taken them before, prior to birth. And I'm looking at the adverse psychiatric drug reactions report from the FDA MedWatch program, and in one column the drug is mentioned, and I'm looking now at a case that in which the drug was Paxil. The indication for giving Paxil in this case was anxiety and depression. The outcome was prolonged bleeding time, convulsions, elevated spinal fluid protein, diminished acquisition of developmental landmarks. Another problem, frequently the babies come out and they are tremulous or have what we call clonus. Others go into frank, full-blown generalized seizures or convulsions.
And these are the children born to mothers who are on the SSRI drug?
Yes. And if it's what's so striking is that the indications for taking these very dangerous especially to the unborn child are anxiety, depression, panic attack, ill-defined disorder, never an actual disease. Here's indication is neurosis. The drug is Paxil. Neonatal respiratory acidosis, neonatal respiratory depression. Often these children end up in neonatal intensive care units, requiring weeks, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of care. And so many of the graduates of neonatal intensive care units turn out to be, frankly, mentally deficient, frankly, brain damaged. And here we are allowing psychiatry, and in this case allowing the House of Representatives, to tell us that depression, bipolar disorder, etc., are actual diseases warranting these dangerous drugs, having these entirely disastrous pregnancy outcomes, newborn outcomes. Again, we get back to the fundamental fraud of biological psychiatry, which is owned and operated by the pharmaceutical industry, is that they claim that depression, anxiety, all of these things are actual brain diseases, every bit as much of a disease as stroke, high blood pressure, cancer, and so on. That's the fundamental fraud.
And, of course, there are lots of profits to be made by the drug companies. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, Dr. Bowman was telling us about this plan, certainly by Congress, the wisdom of the House of Representatives, all lobbied, of course, very heavily by the drug companies, in the name of trying to help pregnant women from being depressed, and who could be in favor of that, or want to pass a federal law that will mandate that all the women be given certain specific tests, and then, of course, as we've seen with the students there in Tennessee, why, of course, most of the students were found to have a severe, the majority were found to have psychiatric disorders that is in the required treatment, and I suspect that's going to happen with women. But what we're talking about is the law of unintended consequences. And the law of unintended consequences says whenever you pass a law, there will be consequences that the people voting on that law never had any idea about. And I really think that this is the frightening thing, that the House of Representatives already voted on it, and now, of course, it's before the Senate. And if it goes to the Senate, it will become the law of our land, and then it will be almost impossible to repeal. But the drug companies are really pushing for this. We've talked to other people who are analyzing what's going on in Washington, D.C. We're talking about billions of dollars of profits for the drug companies, aren't we?
Yes,
moment?
We sure are. We're when one talks about so-called attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, the receipts from drugs alone are over $3 billion a year.
And by the way, if we could just get all those pregnant women out of those drugs, why, think of the profits that could be made.
Yes, well, they are busily targeting all of us. I have no doubt that the excessive amounts of antipsychotic drugs given to elders in nursing homes, known to be causing premature deaths in that population, but that's all resulting from marketplace pressures put on physicians and actual kickback schemes everywhere you turn for every new prescription written, no matter that it kills your elder father or mother or mine. So we're all being targeted by the pharmaceutical industry today, without a doubt, and Congress is the big enabler, both the House and the Senate, and the White House as well.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Dr. Bowman is simply talking about how the drug companies are going to make a tremendous amount of profit if they can, of course, get the Mother's Bill through, which will mandate that all the pregnant women be given these health questionnaires, or postpartum women, women who've already had their child, and of course they want to get them on medication. And of course it's very easy when you have these questionnaires to say, well, obviously you have you're a little depressed. Oh, well, you need to be on a pill, and oh, you've got to get on Prozac. Now, I've heard actually that there are studies that show that Prozac actually increases the incidence of abortion. Have you heard anything about that?
I have not. It would not surprise me to, I mean, it's causing major and minor somatic or physical abnormalities, and often physical abnormalities in the womb are will trigger premature termination of that pregnancy or abortion.
But of course, the thing is that the mother would never know one way or the other. The only way you'd know would be to run a large series and found that those people who are on Prozac would have an increased incidence. And at least according to Amy Philo, who was interviewed, this is exactly what's happened. But nobody seems to be too concerned about that. They're more concerned about the mother's health, and or maybe they're more concerned about the profits that are going to be made. And I hate to sound, suddenly as if I am suspicious of the drug companies, but I am suspicious of the drug companies. Their major thrust is not your health. And anybody who wants to question that, we have a wonderful book written by Dr. Marshall Angel, formerly the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and then, of course, on the staff at Harvard, who wrote a book, What You Should Know About the Drug Companies. And it was an indictment of the drug companies. And, well, they really went after Dr. Marcia Angel to the point where she won't even answer her emails. They watched what she was doing. They tracked her activities. I had an opportunity of talking to representatives of the drug companies who openly admitted that they were following every time she gave a talk anyplace. Really, of course, this is what they do. If you speak out against the big drug companies or many of the other large corporations, they will come after you. And who are you going to report that to? I mean, are you going to report it to the government, to government agents that are certainly benefiting from what the drug companies are doing? I think it puts the individual who speaks out in a very dangerous position. Well, Dr. Bowman is simply talking about the potential complications as far as the mother, what happens to the children, because, of course, if you're giving the medication to a pregnant woman, that child is getting these medications while their brain is forming, and many of these children will come out of the womb tremulous, convulsing, and then they go into the neonatal ward, and many of these people will be permanently brain damaged. Is anybody concerned about this sort of thing, Dr. Bowman? I would think that there'd be a massive outcry from organized medicine.
Well, you would think so, but again, tragically, Dr. Monteith, the academic medical establishment, the medical schools of our country, have been largely bought and paid for right there with academic psychiatry. So your Department of Pediatrics, your Department of Internal Medicine, your Department of Neurology, they know psychiatry's claims of chemical imbalances are fraudulent, but they say nothing about it. They continue to give an appearance of legitimacy to psychiatry. They give them abode within the medical school. And so no one says anything. The other thing that happens when medical academia is bought over, is co-opted by the pharmaceutical industry, is that the professors in the medical school who edit the journals, they're not inclined to publish articles showing or suggesting grave new complications of the latest blockbuster drug. They are not likely to pass for publication any article other than those that are laudatory, that leave no doubt of the safety and efficacy of the latest new drug, even though somebody in a remote European journal has published an article suggesting that this drug or that is unfit for human consumption. So, tragically, we are being betrayed by our academic medical establishments, and that's what Dr. Marcia Angel has written about for much of, certainly in her retirement, and I know of her writings well, and am a great admirer of hers.
In fact, we actually carry that book, What You Should Know About the Drug Company. I don't know if it's still in print, but we still have a few copies. You need to get it. You need to read it. You'll want to weep. And so, in fact, there's been a recent report, and I've forgotten whether it was Pfizer or Merck, but they would actually have their scientists paid by the pharmaceutical company write these long and very detailed reports on how great a drug was, and then go to a well-known scientist and well-known physician and pay him to put his name as the lead author of the article for work he had never done and knew nothing about, but he got his pay, and then they published that in prestigious journals, and people would read those articles and believe that they were impartial, and of course they weren't at all. They were simply bought and paid for by the drug industry to influence the physicians into thinking that this new pill is something you've really got to prescribe, it's really going to help your patient, and that's just so unethical. And of course now the truth has come out, and everybody's saying, oh well, it's simply we weren't trying to deceive anybody at all. And they were, of course, they're trying to deceive, because the issue is not helping people. The issue is what happens to their stock. And if your stock is, if you're making a lot of money, your stock goes up. And if you're an official of that company, why, of course, your stock option values are going to go up, and you're going to get rich. And people have forgotten that the purpose of medicine was to serve people and to help them, not to make profits for the stockholders. This is really disturbing me very much. How about you, Dr. Bowman?
Well, it does me too. I think the proudest day of my life was when I was accepted to New York University School of Medicine, and equally proud when I graduated in 1960 and started practice in neurology in Grand Rapids, Michigan in 1964. I thought ours was the most exemplary, the most upstanding of professions. And again, I was witness to the thalidomide epidemic. I read avidly of its of the progression of that epidemic and of the first allegations by Dr. Wittgenstein-Lenz of Germany voicing his suspicions that thalidomide was indeed the cause of the epidemic of congenital amputations or focal melia. And he was the most amazing, passionate exchange of letters to the editor I've ever seen. Appeared in the early 60s in the letters of the Lancet, of the journal Lancet, a British journal. And industry flacks, or industry pimps, we might say, would try to discredit Lenz, and he passionately wrote back, holding firm to his hard-fought data, and that indeed thalidomide was the culprit, and he won out. And in the fact that our Food and Drug Administration could protect, could act to protect the country, and could prevail against the interests of the Merrill Corporation in facing down industry in Congress and in the House. And so we had a government, we had an FDA, we had a medical profession that worked for the benefit of the public and for the public good. And science hasn't fallen. Science, we have great science. What's fallen within the medical profession is our morality and our ethic. It's been sold. We have betrayed the public, and it's really a national disgrace. And the bigger story behind all of this profit-taking is that there's no money left over to pay the cost of truly necessary care for all of the citizens of this country. And we're the only, tragically, the only developed country in the world who doesn't see to the care of all in its population. This is a national disgrace without a doubt. And the pharmaceutical fraud, the inventing of diseases, mongering of diseases, is plundering the health care budget and making the provision of essential health care for the population an abject impossibility. It just makes me very angry and disgusted with my profession.
Well, of course, the trouble is if with the current corruption we have in Washington, D.C., if we had national health care, I think instead of being better, things would get worse. In other words, I don't think there's any problem facing America today that new legislation won't make worse. I believe we have a crisis in health care in America because of government interference, because of government mandates, because of government requirements. I mean, when I was in medical school, and as my first few years in practice, you went to a hospital. Why, Chris, there was all was somebody there when you rang the bell. You got a back rub every evening. And as, of course, the hospital administrator in my community said recently to me, you know, your chances of getting a back rub in our hospital are about like winning the lottery. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yes.
The quality of health care has gone down, and it's all because of government interference in this, and because of the fact that the federal government made a promise to the elderly, we're going to provide care for you at regular and customary costs, and they don't pay for it. And so they have to do cost shifting to the average individual. And I'm just afraid that if we had national health care, we would be rationed health care. One time, of course, when I went to medical school, and I, of course, graduated a decade before you did, why, of course, we had our county hospitals, and there was nobody in America that could not get medical care at the local community. And if a county did not have a hospital, they were required by law to send and pay for that patient going into an adjacent county for their care. And if you could pay for your care, fine. If you couldn't pay for your care, you still got good care. But those days are long since gone.
Yes.
And those days were more moral society.
I had the good fortune, as did you, to practice in those days. And the origins of the health care crisis in which health care has become so expensive, $7,000 per person per year in the United States, more than twice that in the UK, almost twice that in Canada and the rest of Western Europe. And it's really all of the profit-taking that government has allowed, and this includes Congress and the White House, but there's not a corporation that they don't pander to and give carte blanche to, and that, in my estimation, is the reason for the immense cost overruns. It's not government's hand per se. I think we could make a good. I think Massachusetts has at least shown that it has the will to mandate universal health care for all of the citizens in Massachusetts. They are now finding out that they've got to dramatically alter many things about the way we are delivering this excessively expensive medical care product. But I think it will be interesting to watch the Massachusetts experiment. I myself would like to see administrative costs summarily slashed, which would happen if we had a single government payor such as there is for Medicare. I think that would be a start, but it's certainly totally unsatisfactory when we've got the price of a critical illness being the number one cause of bankruptcies in the United States. That's frankly obscene.
But that's, because if you are going into a hospital and you don't have insurance, you're going to pay for all the Medicare patients, every Medicaid patient. Certainly, if people who have insurance, their companies are going to go ahead and negotiate special low rates for them. And so the only people who are really left to pay for that are the people who do not have insurance and have some assets. We have a totally unfair system monetarily there, and this is the problem that we have. And you're right. Some people do end up going bankrupt, and they go bankrupt, of course, because the government has promised that they could provide health care for every senior citizen, and then they didn't do it. In other words, you, are the average individual out there in the listening audience, is paying for my Medicare. So I can get free medical care, you know, it's with my Medicare and my Blue Cross, but it's being subsidized by all the rest of the society. And, of course, the only way this is ever going to work, when we have universal health care, we're going to have to ration health care. And I can remember talking to the chief of orthopedics over in Edinburgh, Scotland, who told me that they had two lists for surgery. One was the acute, and the other was, of course, the elective. And if you are on the elective list, you never got into the hospital unless you were a commissar. And, of course, by commissar, government officials got in right away, but the rest of the people, they just never got to. So I don't know what the solution is, but I do know that the mother's bill, which is coming down the line, this effort by federal law to mandate that pregnant women be given tests and then ultimately placed onto dangerous drugs, dangerous for themselves and certainly dangerous for their unborn children, is a very real problem. And, of course, this is another example of government interference in health care. Well, we're just about ready to wrap up. Dr. Bowman, do you have a website, anything you'd like to get out?
Yes, Dr. Monteith, I have a book called The ADHD Fraud, How Psychiatry Makes Patients Out of Normal Children. It can be purchased through www.trafford.com. It's also available through Amazon. And
again, once more, the title of that book?
It's The ADHD Fraud, How Psychiatry Makes Patients of Normal Children.
And that would be available on Amazon, probably Barnes
yes.
& Noble as well.
Yes, it
Hang
is.
Hang on, we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. Well, Dr. Bowman, you have 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us. Your thoughts certainly on Prozac, and what can we do to stop this mother's bill from going through, which I think is going to do immeasurable harm to our unborn children and to our mothers.
Well, I think that women who are pregnant, women who are nursing, should never take any medication that is other than absolutely essential. And when one speaks of psychological problems, of mental health problems, of psychiatric problems, medications for those things, for emotional and behavioral problems, are never necessary because those are not actual diseases. Now, if a mother is diabetic and insulin dependent, she may need to continue her insulin. If she has a cancer and it is an aggressive, rapidly growing cancer, she may have to have radiotherapy or chemotherapy while pregnant, as potentially dangerous as that may be for the unborn child. But surely no woman should ever be told that depression is a real disease and that an antidepressant medication is an absolutely essential drug. That is a fundamental lie. If it is contended by a psychiatrist or by any physician representing themselves as a mental health practitioner that any psychiatric diagnosis is an actual disease, that is a fundamental lie, probably intended to sell drugs. So all psychiatric medication can and must be viewed as non-essential and should not be used when a woman is pregnant or a woman is nursing and when the baby's health is in the balance as well.
And I think, of course, the thing that has to be recognized is the fact that we're giving a perfectly healthy or formerly perfectly healthy child a medication that can alter the metabolism of his brain. And why would you want to do that in the way of, it? Of course, treating a non-existent disease in the mother? And, of course, we're doing immeasurable harm to our unborn children. We're raising a whole generation of children, we will be, who have serious emotional and mental abnormalities. Dr. Bowman, thank you very much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure.
Dr. Monteith, likewise, and thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Our guest this evening is Dr. Fred Bowman, a neurologist, talking about the use of psychiatric Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and we certainly hope that you enjoyed our program this evening. And we think, of course, the Mother's Bill, which is before the United States Senate today, is a very dangerous piece of legislation, and we would like to suggest that you write to contact your senators. Amy Philo, we had her on earlier, does have a website. If you'd like to go to her website, amy.philo.com, I believe it is, amy.philo.com or .org. And if you need more information, you can always call us. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do have a 4-tape set on Ritalin, and of course it's dangerous to the young youth of our nation. We're poisoning the youth of our nation. Ritalin, when you put it on, makes a smaller brain. It stunts the growth of the child. Interferes, of course, with their brain function. And, of course, in my estimation, probably is responsible for lowering the IQ in a certain number of the people who are significantly on it. And yet it's being prescribed like candy to literally millions of our children across America. Why would anybody want to hurt our children? Of course, we're coming up with so many of the things. Those of you who are not acquainted with bisphenol, which is the product that's in plastic baby bottles, it lowers the intelligence of our children. Breastfed children do far better, of course, than bottle-fed children, and I believe it's because of the bisphenol hormones that are released in plastic baby bottles when they're heated. And this is another 4-tape set we're going to be putting together. We've only had one interview on it, but we're going to get other interviews. You must understand that they're poisoning our children. You need to get our 4-tape set on vaccines. You need to get, of course, the book by Neil Miller on vaccination, and he has another book on autism. He has a new book out, which we will be carrying. It's the definitive story of vaccines. The one thing they can't let the American people know is the reason we have rising rates of juvenile diabetes, rising rates of asthma, rising rates of autoimmune disease, rising rates of autism and the autism spectrum disorders, to the point where 1 in 6 American children has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality, is because of the vaccination program. Certainly, you can go to our website, read my articles on vaccination. They're there. Just simply go to RadioLiberty.com and pull them down and understand that you've been lied to about vaccines. That actually, in the United States, before they brought in the measles vaccine, why, about 30 children a year died of measles. Today, 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality. The incidence of asthma, autism, and the other diseases is skyrocketing, and they know it's related to the vaccines, and they're intentionally harming our children. Now, most people don't know that, but there really is another agenda. There is an agenda out there that they want to limit the world population, destroy the intelligence of our children, and that is why today, when our children graduate from high school here in the United States and they test them competitively with children from other countries, why we're among the lowest in the world. We rate the lowest in the world. Is that what you really want for your child? Why are children who are breastfed have a higher IQ than children who are not? Look it up on the Internet. It's a well-known fact. And why? It's very simply because we're poisoning with the plastic baby bottles. They've known it for years, and they've suppressed that information from doctors and certainly from mothers, because no mother would want to see her child harmed. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. If you 1-800-544-8927, if you'd like to get our 4 tapes out on Ritalin, certainly on autism. We have, of course, DVDs on autism. I should say.